I'm here with my friends from the Montreal Sangha, the English-speaking Sangha, and I'm also with my brothers and sisters, Dhamma teacher Cheng Hu, true friend, Dhamma teacher Lily Goslin, Dhamma teacher Phi Nhung. So there are many Dhamma teachers here today supporting me, and this is wonderful. So today is the second talk of the series, and the theme of the today's talk will be on the Four Noble Truths. The underlying theme, or the theme of the today this year program, was the Diamond Sutra, and I have been thinking a lot on how is it that I can be studying the Diamond Sutra with you. I have had the chance to discuss this also with my colleagues here, and we came to the conclusion that it would be better if we if we look at all the sutras that are not the Diamond Sutra. So that was one way that I have been thinking that we can manifest or understand the Diamond Sutra by doing what is taught. And I also have had the chance to do this with the Beginner's Mind Sangha in Boise, where I've been last week. This year program has started in September, and since then we have had the first talk in September. This is the second talk, and I have also had the chance to be in Pittsburgh and Idaho. I don't know if you have had the chance to receive the whole program or the whole year program, but if you have not, please do ask your local coordinator to send you the whole year program. That will allow you to be able to see how we propose to do this year's study. De quoi nous avons parlé la dernière fois, le mois dernier? So we started last month with the four factors of enlightenment. And when I was talking about when we studied the seven factors of enlightenment, I have stressed some important points, well, some points that I found important for me when I'm studying the seven factors of enlightenment. And it all starts with our practice of mindfulness. And when I was mentioning about the practice of mindfulness, I reminded us about the study that we did last year, which was based on the four establishment of mindfulness. And I have also reminded us of the practice that we were to do together, and that is to practice the body in the body. Last year, we've spent more than half of the year looking just at the at that first establishment, and for me, I found that it was the most, it is the most important foundation, which start with our practice of mindful breathing. Breathing in, I know I'm breathing in. Breathing out, I know I'm breathing out. And when we are practicing mindful breathing, we bring our attention back to our body and our mind being together, fully present, in the present moment, the joyful and wonderful moment. And when I was in Idaho last week, I have we have spoken about the 16 mindful breath, and it was so wonderful to be practicing that sutra again, breathing in, breathing out, in the short version that Thay has taught to our younger friends, in, out, now, wow. And today I have the great pleasure of having also a friend, Michelle, who is today at the bell, and I will ask him to invite the sound of the bell so that we can all breathe together. So please enjoy your breathing. Thank you, dear friends. I don't know how you are there. I wish that I could see you, and I wish that I could say that you are doing better than me, which is that you are all smiling. I still have difficulties practicing that smiling, but thanks to you, I can be reminded of that. So the first factor of enlightenment, practicing mindfulness, and the other thing that I found also important in last month's teaching is the investigative discrimination. We start practicing mindfulness, we come back to the present moment, we are taught body and mind together, we come back, and we are in this wonderful moment. And in Idaho, when we were practicing together after the fourth day, which I say, I think that we do not really need to go through the in, out, now, wow, but it can just be wow all along. So I hope that you will agree with me that it is just wow when we are practicing mindfulness, mindful meditation. One of my elder friend here, who was also my mentor in the order of interbeing, Brother Chunker, True Energy, has I have been following and looking at me and my practice because as a big brother, he's concerned about how we are doing, and I still remember one of the comments that he has given me then, not directly to other. He say Chenhui is practicing very well the flower watering, and that was my practice, and that was also the practice that I have shared with all of you. For me, this practice has been wonderful because it has allowed me to be in touch with everything that is beautiful and wonderful, which I could not have the capacity to be in touch with. I was always caught in the future. And as soon as something that I would be wishing for would manifest, I would be very skillful in inventing another goal, and I was continuously running. Thanks to my teacher, and thanks to this wonderful teaching, I was able to stop, and it was so wonderful to just be in the present moment, enjoying everything that is so wonderful. And so my other brother mentioned that, yeah, you are very good at practicing flower watering, and I did just that and only that. And he mentioned that, but that is not enough, and you also need to look at suffering. I realized that I have been avoiding that part of the practice. And now that advice is coming back to me, and I'm very thankful for being reminded of that. And so the theme of this talk today about the Four Noble Truths is very appropriate, because it is something that I consider that I need to come back to. We all know about the Four Noble Truths because we have been studying together for some time, and we know that it was the first teaching of the Buddha, and it was also his last. And in his last teaching, allocution to the students that were around him. He did mention that in the 40 or 50 years where he's been teaching, that there's only one teaching that he has been doing, and it's about the Four Noble Truths. So the Four Noble Truths start with the first one, the First Noble Truth, stating that suffering is. And of course, suffering is, and it is suffering that has brought me to realize that I need to do something, and that has put me into this wonderful path of practice. Now I look back at my life. I look back at how I was then. And I seem to say that I tend to skip the first noble truth very fast, and it is one thing to be able to come back, identify, recognize, but the Buddha has also taught that we need to be there in order to be able to fully understand, to fully be in the suffering, so that we can truly understand and not just say, okay, I'm done, and get to the next one. And if you remember when we were studying last year the four establishment of mindfulness, I spent a lot of time speaking about the five obstacles to our practice. And the first obstacle to our practice that we studied about was our tendency to avoid suffering, to run away from suffering, discomfort, and to run after pleasure and to hang on to places where we are safe and comfortable. And I have come to think that that is one of the source of our condition, the condition of suffering that we may or we may not have, or that we have and we may and may not see. But we have been trained, conditioned, and I would even say a hardwired, is that a good word? Yeah. To run away from discomfort and suffering, and to try to hang on and dwell into places where that we are looking for and that we are attached to. So looking at the first noble truth, suffering is. We need to look into suffering, and I have looked into the definition of suffering. And there are many, lots of literature that can that we can find about that. But the most important place where we need to look into or at is at our own suffering. And we may be in deep pain, in deep suffering, and if we are not, we can also look at very small conditions of discomfort, like the one that I have spoken to you about last month when we were speaking about the seven factors of enlightenment. And when I have invited us to practice a sitting meditation, and to remember how when we are trying to be at peace, at ease, or sitting in meditation, and there was something like a noise that would happen. How that that noise, which is something that can sound insignificant, once it hit our ear and it becomes an idea, and how that idea can swell into scenario, and our mind starting to play tapes on projections and etc. So I don't know if you have had the chance to do that exercise, but I am sure that if we have practiced a sitting meditation, we have already been, each of us, through that very simple, very simple occurrence of dissatisfaction. And if we look at how a sound. That is something outside of us. That is something that is outside of our control. Can kick off and start that link of causality. When it comes into contact with our ear consciousness, when it becomes an idea and how it swells into action, and it can lead to violence. And this is very small violence. It is just, it can be only unwholesome thoughts about, for example, why does my wife not understand that I am in meditation and that I need to have peace and quiet, and why does she have always to show her presence when I'm sitting in meditation, and blah blah blah, and all of that come up. And and if we can exercise our capacity to be able to stop and see how that process is happening, it can give us, well, it gave me some joy, a joy that I could be able to see that movie played out without jumping directly to conclusion and to action. And with that simple exercise, we can see how the process of the mind is working. We can also understand how, with that simple process, we can see how it can also be applied with things that may be more serious, how it starts with a stimuli. How the stimuli, when it reach us and combine itself with other things that we already carry inside of us, can lead us to action. And when I'm using the word action here, I'm thinking about karma. And the karma, the translation of karma is action. And when we speak about karma, we understand that it is not only the action, but it is also the speech, the thoughts, and the bodily action. And when we use the word karma, we also understand that this is because that is. We understand that everything that is, or that is manifesting, or that is present today in our life, whether it be our joy, or our happiness, or our suffering, is not something that has been thrown at us, or that has been, but it has been the result, or that it is the result of everything that has happened. This is because that is. And this is because that is also a way that I seem to understand the word karma. Because of our thoughts, because of our action, because of our speech, we have created our suffering. And the suffering that we are speaking about when we are looking into the Four Noble Truths, with this practice of mindfulness, mindful meditation, and the Four Establishment of Mindfulness, for me, it is one way to investigate, to see, to understand the Four Noble Truths, to understand suffering. That it is born from our karma, the karma that we have been creating through our from our daily life since our birth. The karma that we may have also been accumulated for lifetime before, the karma that has been transmitted to us from our parents. And I am encouraging you to please do come back to the practice that we have spoken about last month, the practice of investigative discrimination, to look at suffering, to look at our discomfort, to look at the reaction that we have running after things or avoiding situations, to look at how we are in our daily life. And it does not take much, but any simple occurrence can be the object of our discriminative investigation, can be the effect of our object of our looking deeply. And if we can do it once, if we can do it for one occurrence, for one easy things to look at, and if we can understand that wonderful process, if we can understand how things are born and how our suffering has come to be, has come to become, we can see a process, the process that is described in the 12 links of causality, and we can apply that principle to any and everything else. Traveling of what? What was the right word for the 12 links of what? Hello? Okay, I guess that you hear me better than friends here. So I need this speaker, this microphone. So to understand the 12 links can be a good way to understand the Four Noble Truths and the way that the Buddha has taught us to transcend, overcome suffering. So the First Noble Truth, this is suffering. We practice in order to nourish ourselves, so that we can be strong, stable, and solid. Stable and solid enough to be able to look at our suffering without being overwhelmed by it. But to be able to practice what our teacher has so beautifully taught us to do by the image, with the image of holding the crying baby. So if we can be loving enough, if we can have enough love inside of us, and if we can use that love to embrace the suffering that is screaming, crying, and that is the practice of calming that our teachers have taught us to do. I have also mentioned about the 12 turnings of the wheel, and I think that it is very important if we are to practice the Four Noble Truths to look at the first noble truth, with the first three turning of the wheel. This is suffering, to identify, recognize, and to be with it. To look at it and to understand it, and to not leave it until it has been completely understood. And when it is completely understood, the second noble truth is become obvious, because if we have understood it, the causes of it, why it has come to be, become also very obvious, because it is part of it, is with the first noble truth. We cannot say that we have understood the suffering if we have not seen and fully understood how it has come to be. So that is the first, the second. And the third is to know that when the causes are not there, that there is the other state of non-suffering that the Buddha has so lovingly offered to us in his teaching. I have here a friend with whom I have practiced for all of my practice career. Dhamma teacher Lily has asked me a very difficult question, and I would like to also offer it to you so that we can all practice together during. She mentioned to me that I understand suffering. I know my suffering, and I have decided to not suffer anymore. I have decided to give my life to this practice, and all my life is devoted to this practice. Why is it that I still suffer? If you have not come to that commitment yet, it's my wish that you do. Commit yourself to the practice and the career of removing suffering in you. Because you deserve it. Because as students of the Buddha, we have received that wonderful teaching. The wonderful teaching that has been given to us, for each of us to be able to remove our suffering. And it would be ungrateful if we do not commit ourselves to do that practice. And so I am offering you in this talk that question. The first question is, do I suffer? And because I suffer, how is it affecting the happiness or the non-happiness or the suffering of the people that I live with and that I love? Do I want them to not be fully happy? Do I want them to suffer because of my suffering? And if we extend that question to our friends, to our friends on the practice, to our Sangha, and if we can extend that to the larger circle, to our office environment, to our city, to this world, do we want them to suffer? How is it that we can help How is it that we can do? And at the Boise Idaho Beginners Mind Sangha, we have looked at those questions together. And we have come to the realization or the understanding that suffering is, our suffering is, and we can live it, and we can see it, and we can work on it, and we can understand it, and we can do things. And when we are practicing with the First Noble Truth, and we can understand suffering, or we can see how damaging, I cannot find a word, but how it is something that we do not want for ourselves. And because we do not want for ourselves, and because we know how much it is that we want to avoid, that we want to not be subject to it, we do not want it to happen to anybody either. We do not want it to happen to the people that we love in our family. We do not want it to happen to the people we are meeting on the street or in our everyday life. And we do not want it to happen to anybody. So practicing the First Noble Truth is one way to be able to discover or to nourish our bodhicitta, the mind of love, the love that is at the heart of the bodhisattvas in this world. And that with the practice of the First Noble Truth, we can nourish that bodhicitta, and we can nourish our mind of love. We can develop our love in order to be the bodhisattva that we want to be. Because after the transmission of the five mindfulness training, I have repeated a phrase in the transmission ceremony. To practice the five mindfulness trainings is to be on the path of a bodhisattva. So we are all on the path of the bodhisattva because we have all been received and been practicing the five mindfulness trainings. We have received and practiced the five mindfulness trainings to be on the path of a bodhisattva. And because of our practice of the five mindfulness trainings, we have developed our love in such a way that we feel that we cannot just not do it only for ourselves. And we engage ourselves in the order of interbeing. We want to practice engaged Buddhism. We want to practice engaged Buddhism so that we can be there to relieve the suffering of all beings. And so we are bodhisattva in training. And for me, the training that we need to do is with the practice of the Four Noble Truths. The Four Noble Truths that our teacher has so wonderfully translated in the new version of the five mindfulness trainings. So practicing the five mindfulness trainings, we are practicing the Four Noble Truths. We are practicing awareness of suffering, the way out of suffering, and the whole of the Eightfold Path. I can hear the bell, which means that our time is already over for this month. It has been a pleasure being with you again, and my best wishes to you for a very happy, successful practice, and we will see it again soon. Thank you very much for being there, and have a wonderful rest of the day.